Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Attacks of the Bedroom Radicals begin. Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist, and your terrorist therapist. I know you're scratching your head and wondering, what is a bedroom radical? Well, a bedroom radical is someone who has been in lockdown and who has had an inordinate amount of time to spend online. And during this time, they have become radicalized by terrorist propaganda, whether that's ISIS or Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or any other subgroups of terrorists. They have, particularly because of being disgruntled, you know, as we all pretty much were during lockdown, as well as having all this time. So I'm going to talk to you today about two examples of these bedroom radicals coming forward, two terror attacks that you may well not have heard about because terror attacks these days are not making front page news. There seems to be a movement afoot to try to pretend that terrorism doesn't exist, but that's why you can always come here and find out that it does, and about the latest attacks. Now, these two attacks occurred, one in Norway and one in England, in London. And, you know, of course, that's why they were perhaps not front page news in America. But the point of that I'm going to tell you about now, I'm going to tell you about those stories, about the attacks, but I want you to keep this in mind, because if you're thinking, oh, well, that was Norway and that was London and I don't live in those places, so I really don't have to worry about that. It's not going to happen to me. Well, you know, unfortunately, Europe and Scandinavia are amongst the places that have opened their doors to migrants, even before the tragedy and travesty in Afghanistan, just regular migrants coming, many of whom came from countries where they are known to have a lot of jihadis, a lot of terrorists who want to attack the West. And to that end, and really Europe and Scandinavia, they are so shocked when something, not as much London, but certainly Scandinavia, and I mean, even London relatively, because I mean, there have been numerous terror attacks in London, but there is still this sense of, could this be dangerous that we have allowed so many migrants into our country? So there's really a tendency to not want to acknowledge terror attacks as being terror attacks. Now, the reason, the significance of this for people who live in the US is that now have brought in, besides all the people who are coming across the southern border, including some terrorists amongst them, because they are sneaking in. It's not hard when you have so many people crossing the border, and we already know there have been terrorists caught crossing the southern border. But in addition to that, now that we've had this travesty in Afghanistan, even the Homeland Security Secretary has admitted that, quote, of the 60,000 Afghans who have entered the U.S., nearly 8,000 are either U.S. citizens or residents, while about 1,800 are SIV holders, having obtained visas after assisting the U.S. military, unquote. Now, that leaves approximately 50,200 Afghan refugees. You listen for this. For whom we had no certain identification and no assurance whatsoever that they weren't jihad terrorists, We didn't know anything about them at all and still don't. So if you don't think we have anything in common in terms of being in danger, just like Norway and London, you're wrong. But that will be the subject of many future podcasts, terrorist therapist podcasts, as we have one attack after the other by these jihadist Afghans who have snuck through. But for today, let's talk about this very creative or resourceful terrorist in Norway, whose name is Espen Andersen Brathen. And he just recently murdered 5 people and injured 3 people, starting out with an attack that was with a bow and arrow. Now, you got to say, for a terrorist, he's pretty resourceful. And he started out in a grocery store using a bow and arrow and shooting that at people. And then he went to, he left the grocery store and he went to this one particular street. Now, this town in Norway, it's called Kongsberg, and it is a very small, quiet, peaceful postcard, you know, picture postcard town. Beautiful, you know, serene. Nothing like this has happened before there. And that's where he murdered people living in their homes. After he left the grocery store with his bow and arrow, he then murdered people, and they believe with knives. He stabbed them. So let me tell you his story. The story begins about this is a case that is an example. I've talked about terrorists before who exemplify this in previous podcasts, where there is this issue, this question of, is he a jihadist? Is he a real terrorist? Or is he crazy, mentally ill? And I have, as I have mentioned in previous podcasts, having a mental illness and being a real terrorist are not mutually exclusive. They, in fact, people who have mental illness are more vulnerable to terrorist propaganda. So approximately 5 years ago, the story begins where Espen Andersen Brathen, but let's call him Espen. He's the son of a Norwegian father and a Danish mother. And he walked into a mosque 5 years ago, approximately, in this calm town, asking the person in the mosque for help to deliver a message to the world that he claimed to have received, quote, from above, unquote. Now, feeling that you're a messenger of God, whether it's Allah or a Jewish God, a Christian God, any kind of God, that concept of feeling that you are getting a message and feeling that you are a messenger of God and you have to give this message to the world is typical of psychosis, and in particular, typical usually of schizophrenia, though it could also be of mania. But in this particular case, and the description of this man, it does seem like his mental illness is most likely schizophrenia. So anyhow, he walked into this mosque and he told that to the person who heads the mosque, whose name is Usama Tilili. And this person who was the head of the mosque, now again, this is about 5 years ago, and the person who was the head of the mosque hasn't thought much about Espen until this incident, this rampage of a terrorist attack where he killed people, starting off with bows and arrows and then stabbing people. So he has confessed, by the way. So now this head of the mosque is remembering about this man who came in some years ago, and he said, I told him we are not a news agency. And this is the only mosque in Kongsberg, in this town. He said, you could see the tension in his face and his body. It made me uncomfortable. And I remember thinking, this man is at risk. Now, he said, this mosque leader goes on to say that, that he didn't think that, oh, at the time that he came to the mosque, Espen was a recent convert to Islam. Now, it's not clear yet where he got converted, or, you know, if this was an official conversion or he just did it himself online or something. But the head of the mosque said that he thought that he was a man less motivated by religious fervor than one who had deep personal troubles. Again, these things aren't mutually exclusive. So now this man is at a mental health facility because although the police started out saying that they, you know, thought this was a terror attack and so on, they also decided that he needed psychiatric help, which indeed he does, but that doesn't take away from his being a terrorist. One policeman said he is very tired and he is not well mentally. Now, what's interesting, of course, is that the local police and the district psychiatric care center are being investigated for possible lapses in their dealing with Mr. Brathen. Obviously, he fell through the cracks. Now, let's see, he lived in Kongsberg most of his life. He attended junior high school there. Interviews were done with friends and acquaintances, and they describe him as a soft-spoken, amicable young man who took a sudden disturbing turn. Now, this one woman who's 30 years old said that she met him in around 2009, so that would have been when he was around 25, and she said he was incredibly kind, not attention-seeking. She used to see him often at parties. Quote, he was never talking about politics or religion. He was more interested in skateboarding, hip-hop, and smoking hash. Now, we know that smoking hash or marijuana or any drugs can cause one, especially if they have a genetic predisposition to a psychosis like schizophrenia, to bring it out. In recent years, when she ran into him, she said he always looked unsettled. His eyes were evasive and his sentences would trail off. The last time she saw him was the Saturday before the attack, from when she was walking home from a grocery store. And she said he was in front of her when he suddenly started acting paranoid, checking frantically over his shoulder. Quote, it was so obvious to anyone who saw him on the street, even those who didn't know him, that he needed help. He first appeared in police reports in 2012 for petty crimes like drug possession and for breaking and entering into a local mining museum. And then he converted to Islam and he found his way to the mosque at the Islamic Cultural Center in Kongsberg. And that's where he asked Mr. Talili for help in delivering his divine message. So Mr. Talili said, this guy, he didn't know anything about Islam. He didn't even know how to wash his hands properly before afternoon prayer. He was not at all interested in speaking about religion. He suspected even then that he may have been ill. Looking back, I believe it was a cry for help. And he said that he wanted to call the police or, you know, to tell the police about him, but he didn't. And then when the man stopped coming to the mosque, he just kind of forgot about it until now. Well, I will stop here in this story and continue when we come back, including there is a video that he posted to Facebook in 2017. And I will read that to you. I will tell you what he said. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about attacks of the bedroom radicals begin. And the first bedroom radical that we're talking about is Espen Andersen Brathen. And now it's not clear yet that he, it's not 100, you know, they're still investigating his crime. He is the bow and arrow terrorist in Norway, and the police are still investigating his crime, and he is currently in a psychiatric hospital where psychiatrists are trying to unravel his mind, hopefully. and I will continue with his story, which is really very interesting. So getting back to the Mr. Talili, who was the head of the mosque that this man, that the terrorist went to and said that he is a messenger of God, or he has a message that he wants to deliver to people. He came in a few times and then he stopped. And this was around the same time in around 2015 that Norway's police security service learned that he had converted to Islam and that he had appeared to pose a threat. And then in 2017, that is when he posted this video on YouTube in which he said he was a messenger. Now I will tell you exactly what he said. It's a rather chilling video. I mean, it's a video where you can really tell that there is something mentally wrong with this man. He says, "Hello." It's not just the words, it's his tone. It's how he's saying it. It looks like he's reading it. And you know that he had written this out and he's reading it, but there's a kind of sort of chilling tone. So he said, "Hello, I am a messenger. I come with a warning. Is this really what you want? And to all who want to make up for himself. So it's time. Bear witness that I am a Muslim." Now, people who don't believe or who don't believe that some Muslims, extremist Muslims, are taught to and in ISIS, you know, and the various terrorist groups teach terrorists to kill the unbelievers. So really his message saying it's time, bear witness that I am a Muslim. This is his warning. I come with a warning. His warning is that he is a Muslim. He's trying to say that he has been taught the teachings of terrorists, of some terrorist group. We don't know who yet. And so he is dangerous, you know, that he is going to follow their teachings. Now, again, of course, not all Muslims are terrorists and not all terrorists are Muslim. Okay, now it comes out that he had psychiatric examinations in 2010 and 2018. And here we have yet again the failure of psychiatry, which I am so sick and tired of seeing, where people, you know, come get to a psychiatrist or get to a clinic one way or another, whether someone brings them there or they find, you know, make their way there themselves because they're unhappy and so on. And perhaps he was given medication and then he just didn't continue taking it. We don't know what happened, but clearly this clinic or this psychiatrist didn't follow up, which he obviously should have done. The psychiatrist should have seen that there was enough risk there, that there was enough serious mental illness there to not just hand him a prescription and send him off into the sunset. So hopefully they will get to the bottom of that. And of course, the center, the psychiatric center, is saying we're going to turn over every stone to get to the bottom of this. That does not help the 5 people who were killed and the 3 people who were injured. Now, last year, a judge imposed a 6-month restraining order on him at his parents' request because he refused to leave his parents' house. He threatened to kill his father, and he left a revolver on their sofa. Now, yet, you know, nothing was done. He wasn't arrested. He wasn't brought to put in the hospital. There are these two roommates who lived across the street from him, and they describe him as a brooding, unstable presence who often kept to himself. There were two women. One woman said, one day he would be making creepy comments about my hair or my dress, and the next he would walk right by me with completely empty eyes. And it's interesting, that is how the people in London described the terrorist, Ali Harbi Ali, 25 years old, who stabbed the member of parliament. They mentioned how he had, how that terrorist had empty eyes. And then one of these women tried to alert her neighbors, but her concerns went unheeded. Now, what else can I tell you about him? So, now one thing that's really interesting is that the police in Norway don't have guns. So when he began shooting his bow and arrow at people in the supermarket, the police confronted him. But since they are unarmed, they retreated when he began firing arrows. The dangers of not having the police with guns and the dangers of not allowing the public to have guns. You know, that's why we have the Second Amendment. So the police finally apprehended him 35 minutes later after he had murdered five people. Really sad. He had been previously flagged as having been radicalized. The chief of police said there has previously been worrying information about this man linked to his radicalization, which the police have followed up on. But in 2021, we have not received any warnings about him. That's because he was on the internet ingesting more radical propaganda. So he was free and unsupervised, and he obviously should have had more supervision. Now he probably came into contact with publications of the Islamic State, with ISIS, which in 2014 issued this call to Muslims in Western countries. And this is what ISIS put out as their propaganda. Now this was in 2014, and he, you know, by 2015, he was a convert and he was wanted to give his message. So this is what ISIS told people, told wannabe lone wolf terrorists. Quote, "You must strike the soldiers, patrons, and troops of the Tawagit, the rebels against Allah. Strike their police, security, and intelligence members, as well as their treacherous agents. Destroy their beds, embitter their lives for them, and bitter them with themselves, and busy them with themselves. If you can kill a disbelieving American or European, especially the filthy French or an Australian." They don't like those people, especially, or a Canadian or any other disbeliever from the disbelievers waging war, including the citizens of the countries that entered into a coalition against the Islamic State, then rely upon Allah and kill him in any manner or way, however it may be, like even using a bow and arrow, right? If you are not able to find an IED or a bullet, then single out the disbelieving American, Frenchman, or any of their allies, smash his head with a rock, or slaughter him with a knife, or run him over with your car, or throw him down from a high place, or choke him, or poison him. So, needless to say, he figured out bows and arrows would do just as well. So let's see. There's so much to his story. I'm trying to give you the highlights. There was a preliminary hearing. It was decided that he should be held for 4 weeks by the health services. That's what the police requested. And he was banned from writing letters and receiving visits during this period. He has to spend the first 2 weeks in full isolation. That'll help somebody's mental health, right? He had lived alone in Kongsberg. As I think I said, he had multiple convictions for aggravated theft and drug possession. There was one remaining friend. He had one remaining friend who broke ties with him in 2017 when he spotted him on a YouTube video, the one that I presumably just told you about, saying he had converted to Islam and making veiled threats. Okay, that is the story of the bow and arrow terrorist in Norway. And when we come back, I will tell you the story of the terrorist, Ali Harbi Ali, who stabbed a very well-loved and respected member of parliament in London. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about Attacks of the Bedroom Radicals Begin. Well, here is another bedroom radical. probably when I said this at the beginning or when you saw the title of this podcast, you thought it had something to do with sex, somebody who was radical in bed, but no. No, not on the Terrorist Therapist Show, at least not yet. I mean, there may well be a terrorist who does something crazy in bed as well. But here I am talking about terrorists who have, during the lockdowns, been spending a lot of time becoming radicalized online. And now that the lockdowns are being released, they are coming into the streets and looking for people and ways and places to attack. Now, if you've been listening to these podcasts for a while, you know that I have been talking about this during this whole time of COVID, that that the only reason why we have not heard about more terror attacks during these 1.5 years or so is because people weren't on the streets. And when we come back out on the streets and in different places like concert halls, you know, and places where there are a lot of people, that we are going to be seeing more of these attacks. And lo and behold, yes, they are starting. Now, the one that I was just telling you about, the Norway terrorist, bow and arrow terrorist, you know, he started his attack in a supermarket using bows and arrows, and then continued the attack going on this street, a particularly well-loved street, a historical street that is, you know, an epitome of calm, serene, historical streets in Norway. And he killed those people, went into their houses actually, and killed them, stabbed them. He threw away his bow and arrow and he stabbed them. So now we're going to London, where Ali Harbi Ali, a 25-year-old British citizen of Somali descent, stabbed a well-loved member of parliament whose name is David Amos. Now, this man this member of parliament, this MP, was having a meeting. Every couple of weeks, he would have meetings in the area that he was representing, you know, the community that he was representing, so that he could talk to his peoples, you know, the people who he represents, like one-on-one, and find out what their complaints were, what he could do to help them. And everybody of all parties in the UK say that he was just a wonderful, nice guy, really down to earth, really trying to help his constituents. And so he was having one of his typical meetings. It was in a church where in the middle of his community. And in the middle of this, a man came in, Ali Harbi Ali, and stabbed him 17 times, by the way. And this is a man who is linked to Islamist extremists. And now, not as much is known about Ali Harbi Ali as the Norwegian terrorist, because it happened a little later, or because it's just taking them longer to delve into his background. But there are three houses connected to him. One where he lived growing up and where some of his family still lives, one where his father lives, and one where he lives, where Ali lived before he did this attack. He traveled 50 miles by train to go to this meeting where he knew that David Amos was going to be. Now, in this particular case, it seems targeted. Either it was random, he just saw an ad, this MP would publicize when and where he was going to be having his regular meetings. So whether it just so happened that Ali saw this ad, or there is some particular reason why he targeted this one, that is what they are investigating. So this isn't an example necessarily it's not an example of where he tried to kill lots of people. I mean, that's the whole point. Terrorists like to kill as many people and injure as many people in one attack as possible. But this, this Ali did not stab any of the other people standing around who had come to the meeting. But certainly they weren't having these meetings in person during the lockdown. So it does really follow the same thing that I was saying at the beginning. after he stabbed him, he calmly waited for the police to arrive, and he was arrested at the scene on suspicion of murder. Like, there was no, I mean, there were people, all kinds of witnesses, of course. And so they knew who did it. I mean, there was no question about that. They're calling him a bedroom. In fact, the police are calling him a bedroom radical. I didn't just make this up myself. And he was alone. He's a lone wolf terrorist, and he is thought to have become radicalized online recently. Now, during the lockdown and isolation, that has made people not just wannabe terrorists, but has made lots of people more introspective and angry, many of us, if not most of us. And so that makes people more vulnerable to becoming radicalized. He was British born, but he's of Somali descent. And he may have been inspired, probably it's going to turn out, that he was inspired by the Somali terrorist group Al-Shabaab, which is an offshoot of Al-Qaeda in Somalia and Kenya. Now, an interesting aspect to this story is that his father, who is Somalian, his name is Harbi Ali Kulani, he's 61, and he's a former communications advisor to the Prime Minister of Somalia. Now, when the police went to him and told him about what his son just did, he said, quote, "I'm feeling very traumatized. It's not something that I expected or ever dreamed of," which, to tell you the truth, I don't know how that strikes you, but excuse me, sir. Yes, you may be traumatized if we can believe that you had no idea about your son becoming radicalized. But how about the MP who your son just stabbed to death 17 times? Excuse me if I'm not feeling particularly compassionate towards you being traumatized. It's because of you. You were the one who grew a son who became radicalized. I mean, obviously, there is some issue there between the father and the son that is going to be hopefully elucidated. Now, let's see. The father, in fact, and just like the Norwegian terrorist, this Mr. Ali, the London terrorist, had been referred to this PREVENT program in London. I've talked about this before. It's a counter-terrorist program, which it's meant for people to refer people who they suspect of potentially becoming radicalized so that they can try to de-radicalize them before they actually have a terror attack. Well, so, and he was reported to them, but they did not, and there is this potential motivation linked to Islamic extremism. And he didn't stay very long in this PREVENT program. Now, I'm not quite sure why people, you know, it's supposed to be voluntary and it's not a criminal sanction, but, you know, it seemed to me that the police should try to keep, if the people leave the PREVENT program, you know, don't want to be de-radicalized, then they should keep more attention to them, pay more attention to them, keep them under some kind of supervision. This is a program where teachers, members of the public, the National Health Service, and others can refer individuals to a local panel of police and social workers and other experts. And these people try to decide whether and how to intervene in their lives, basically to de-radicalize them. Now, it turns out that the father, I mean, you know, so I don't know who referred him. They haven't said who referred him to the PREVENT program, but certainly, I mean, why didn't his father realize that there was a problem? Now, it turns out that the father is kind of an interesting character. I mean, of course, all the people in Ali's neighborhood are saying, oh, they are so surprised because he was such a nice boy when he was in that neighborhood. Of course, his parents are divorced. He lived in this neighborhood until he was 16 or 17, and his parents are divorced. So that could well have been, as it often is, the turning point for when someone goes down the wrong path. Now his father, let's see, his father was a very political man. His father is a man of strong political opinions, and he described himself on Twitter as the father I'm talking about, as the former director of media and communication department at the office of the Prime Minister, Federal Republic of Somalia. But he came back to the UK, the father came back to the UK for medical reasons, a heart condition, and he was being treated at a hospital in London. He has very strong political opinions. He's been railing about his country's current president, Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed. And he has said, the father has said, he's not a deity who determines our future. He's mentally handicapped with dictatorial tendencies. Now that he is compromised, let's fast forward elections, and on and on. So he was very, very loud politically. And certainly that could have been an influence, likely be an influence to his son. Although I'm not saying that the father was a terrorist, but the idea of having radical kinds of opinions, strong opinions that one acts on, expresses, you know, could well have been an influence. Now, there's a question as to whether Ali had made an appointment to be at this meeting with the MP, or whether he just came that day and he was ushered in, he was allowed in. So we will hear more, find out more about him, And the mosques in London, the South End mosques, are condemning this attack. They're saying it's an indefensible atrocity. They're saying that this man who Ali killed was an upstanding friend, quote, upstanding friend to our Muslim community, and attended key events, including weddings, mosque openings, and the launch of the town's first Muslim scout group. So it's very sort of, it's still a mystery as far as why, whether he picked this guy, why he picked this guy when the MP was such a friend to Muslims. But we will undoubtedly hear more. And if it is interesting enough, I will follow up with this on a future podcast. But for now, the message is that these bedroom radicals, their attacks are beginning as we come out of lockdown. Now, again, I am not saying to hide under the covers, but just kind of be more alert. Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism4kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.